jumper on the way. Good! Tyus Battle nails the three!
Dungy leaps and into the end zone for Dungy. A touchdown!
If that's not on every highlight show tonight, then I don't know who's watching.
Howard for Dungy! Soaring through the air! High-flying Slovakian!
Screen pass here. He'll get one. And he stays alive, and he's got room to the 10. One man to beat. He'll do it. Touchdown, Syracuse!
And for Syracuse, party time.
The upset pulled by the Orange. They defeat Clemson 27-24.
Battle. The penetration. Step back. Oh, a pressure bucket for Tyus Battle.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg, powered by Driver's Village and Hummel's Office Plus.
Welcome in and welcome aboard a Tuesday edition of Orange Nation here on ESPN Radio 97.7 and 100.1. We're taking you up until 2 o'clock this afternoon here on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, ESPNSyracuse.com. Many ways to listen, many ways to get involved. 315-437-7644, the telephone number, 315-288-0644. Is the text line and on Twitter at ESPN Syracuse and at Seth Goldberg 17. So Stephen Fonte is traveling out to Salt Lake City. He will join us on the show tomorrow. He'll join us Thursday and Friday as well on the phone from Salt Lake. In case you don't know, we've got the NCAA tournament action Thursday and Friday here all day long. Like, we're your home for the NCAA tournament. Just kind of post up at work. Have your earbuds in, pop up the stream, which is on our website. We've got all the information on how to stream these games, or you know, your good old-fashioned pocket radio, or whatever you may please. We've got the action. So leading up to the game, 11 to 12 o'clock, I'll be over at the Press Room Pub. We'll be getting you ready for the NCAA tournament, for all the action. We'll dive into some of that today. There are a couple of games that I highlighted, a couple of games that really stood out to me for the first weekend and the first days of the NCAA tournament. So we'll talk about that coming up in a little bit. We'll have Brian Higgins coming on in a little bit as well, coming up in hour number two to talk about the SU women's basketball team, their NCAA tournament bid. They are the 3 seed in their region. They are hosting NCAA tournament games once again. The last time they hosted NCAA tournament games, they went all the way to the Final Four. They rode the momentum. They took advantage of 2 games in their home building that they could win, and they went all the way to the Final Four. So we'll talk to Brian about that and probably some SU men's basketball as well coming up in a little bit. I want to get to Mike Trout and baseball in the second hour as well. We got a sound check coming up later on in hour number one. But I do want to start with Syracuse basketball. I do want to start with Syracuse and Baylor, this game on Thursday night. It's a late one. It's going to start after 10 o'clock in all likelihood. But I'm intrigued by this game. I'm really intrigued by this game. Because looking at Baylor and digging in a little bit more, they don't play a big lineup. They play one forward. Now they have some guards who are 6'7", 6'9". So they've got a little height. But those players are still guards. Their leading rebounder gets about 7 a game. Yes, he's a guard. 6'5", Mark Vidal. So you look at this team and you wonder to yourself, they're a small team, they're going to come play against this zone. How are they going to translate? And you can say, well, they've played a zone before. They've done some work against the zone. And I always caution that. I really do. I always caution the people who say, well, they've played zone before. Because I tend to say, if you think that, then, you know, you're in trouble. I go back to the Giddy Potts reference a couple of years ago. 3 years ago, Middle Tennessee State beats Michigan State. And after the game, Giddy Potts, their star player, bombing threes against the Spartans, leading them to a win. After the game, he's like, yeah, we've seen zone. Like, Rice played zone. We're good. We got this. And right from that moment, I said, you know what? They're in trouble. They're not winning that game. Because they think they're good. They think they've seen a zone before. They think that they understand what Syracuse is going to come out and do, but they're not. They're not ready. Because Syracuse's zone is just a little bit different. A little bit more aggressive. A little bit more far-reaching. gives your three-point shooters just a little bit more trouble than that typical zone does give. So looking closer at Baylor, they play a whole bunch of guards. Only three non-guards played at all this year. Only one forward was in their rotation, really, getting regular minutes. They've got four players scoring between 10 points a game and 14.6 points per game. And they shoot 34% from three. They're a balanced scoring attack. They're an okay, not great three-point shooting team. And I say this because that's what Syracuse is. That's exactly what Syracuse is from three. They're 33%, Baylor 34%. There's little to no difference. I look at these two teams as two teams that are similar. Led by guards, led by forwards. You know, Elijah Hughes is essentially a guard on this team. Buddy Boeheim, Frank Howard, Tyus Battle. Among the team's six best players, among the team's five best players, I would say, those four. You look at Syracuse and you look at Baylor, and there's a reason why they're in the 8-9 game. Because they're fairly similar teams. They've had fairly similar seasons. They've beaten some teams. They've lost some games that you don't want to lose. But at the end of the day, they're in the tournament. At the end of the day, they're good enough. They've done enough work to warrant being in the tournament and to warrant not being in that first four, to warrant not being close to the bubble, right? They're just good enough to be in the field without having to worry. So what does that mean? Does that mean that Baylor is better than Syracuse? Maybe. I don't know. The committee obviously thought that Syracuse was better. The committee obviously put Syracuse just a tick ahead of this Baylor Bears team. But these 8-9 games are kind of weird for that reason. Usually they're close. Usually they're kind of back and forth. Because these teams are pretty evenly matched up. These teams are pretty similar. The same way that we looked at last year and looked at that Syracuse-Arizona State game in the first four and said, yeah, these teams are pretty similar. These teams are pretty evenly matched. They've got a lot of the similar numbers. They've got a lot of the same aspects to their team. Yeah, because they're both 11 seeds, because they're both fighting for that last spot into the field of 64. And I feel similarly this year. Because in an 8-9 game, you're matching up with a team that's more or less on your level. You're not a 4 playing a 13. You're not a 1 playing a 16. You're not a team that is just physically stronger and more imposing than the team that you're looking at on the other side. That's not what happens when you're a 7 or an 8. Or even to some extent a 6. That's not what happens when you get seated in the middle of the bracket. And I think that we are going to see that on Thursday night. We're going to see two teams that are, for the most part, pretty evenly matched. So then it essentially comes down to what can Syracuse do? Because I think this Syracuse team is better than they've looked all year. I think that they looked good last week in Charlotte. If Tyus Battle is playing, they probably look even better. And Tyus Battle is going to be back for this game in 2 days. So what can Syracuse do becomes the question. Is Syracuse going to have problems? Is Syracuse going to shrink on the big stage? I don't seem to think so. Neither does Tyus Battle.
We return pretty much everyone. I mean, everyone has that tournament experience now. I have it under my belt. So I think last year was the tournament jitters. I think I was pretty excited about it, but this year I think I'm more prepared and ready to go.
And this is great news. You know, I'm somebody who's got the Time Hop app on my phone, right? So every day at some point, morning, night, whatever it might be, I'm looking through my Time Hop and I see tweets come up from the previous year, from this day, from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, however long it might be. And so this time of year, I'm seeing all these tweets about March Madness coming up. And I saw some tweets about Syracuse playing against TCU. I saw some tweets yesterday on my Time Hop about Syracuse playing Michigan State. And, you know, the numbers weren't pretty for Tyus Battle and Frank Howard in those Arizona State and TCU games. They managed to win games despite the fact that those two didn't play well last year. And it was something that we hadn't seen the majority of the season. So when Tyus Battle says, hey, I'm not going to have tournament jitters this time around, that was a thing. Like, he struggled early in the tournament last year. Did he come along? Did he hit a big shot against Arizona State and hit a big shot against TCU and play an unbelievable final 6 minutes against Michigan State, an unbelievable second half against Michigan State in that tournament last year? Yes, he absolutely did. But he struggled off the bat. And that is because you haven't been there before. You haven't done it before. And this year, Syracuse has the benefit of having been through it. Tyus Battle, Frank Howard, O'Shea Brissett, Pascal Chukwu, Marek Dolezal, Barama Sidibe. They've got the benefit of going through it. And there are only so few guys who haven't been in this tournament setting. And the interesting part is that they've been in this setting before. They just haven't played in this setting before, as Frank Howard told us on Sunday night.
Those are two guys who, you know, kind of already seasoned, you know, in their own way. You know, Buddy is a guy who's been around for a while, and Elijah saw everything last year. He just couldn't, you know, go on the trips and play with us. So, you know, it's not like they're just fresh meat out there. So, you know, I'm confident they'll be ready. Buddy stepped up in some big games this past week, and Elijah as well. And, you know, they've performed all year. So, you know, we're not worried about that.
When you hear Frank Howard say it that way, it's pretty interesting. Right? Elijah Hughes has not played in the NCAA tournament, has not played on a big stage. The biggest stage he's played on is the ACC tournament last week. Maybe if you want to say the game at Duke earlier this year, the Duke game at home. One of those, you know, four or five games is the biggest game that Elijah Hughes has played, the biggest stage that he's played on. But he was with the team last year. He was at the games. He was in the atmosphere. He knows what the tournament is like. He knows what the schedule is like. He knows that it's kind of weird when you're sitting around in the back of a building and you don't know when your game is going to start, because he watched his guys go through that last year. Buddy Boeheim, same thing. How many times has Buddy Boeheim gone to the NCAA tournament? How many times has Buddy Boeheim waited around as he doesn't know when his favorite team is going to take the court? How many times has Buddy Boeheim been around NCAA tournament games and arenas? So it's this really interesting, unique situation where Syracuse's two inexperienced guys are experienced in strange and unique ways. Elijah Hughes was there. Elijah Hughes was around this team. Elijah Hughes was a piece of this team last year, although he wasn't playing. Buddy Boeheim, coach's son, has been there forever, right? Has been going to NCAA tournament games for 15 to 20 years, 15 to 18 years, right? He's 18 years old. I was going to say 20. He's not 20 years old yet. 15 to 18 years he's been going to NCAA tournament games. There are pictures of him after they won the championship on the floor. They've been around this. It's this weird kind of balance where you wouldn't think that they're experienced, but in a way they've got tournament experience. The only experience they don't have is actually playing on the court. Actually sitting down, having your name announced to the crowd, and going into the game. But they've both experienced that odd wait and see. They've both experienced that strange feeling of not knowing when your team's game is going to start. They've both experienced the atmosphere, the energy, and the excitement in the building of an NCAA tournament venue. So I don't know that you're going to see the jitters in the way that we saw Tyus Battle that he admitted to in that clip from Sunday night. I don't know that you're going to see the jitters out of Elijah Hughes and Buddy Boeheim. Buddy Boeheim, when the stage got biggest and the lights got brightest, put on two of his best games of the year last week in Charlotte. I don't worry about that. It's a matter of, does the same team that played last week for the Orange show up tomorrow and Thursday for Syracuse? That team that was playing without Tyus Battle, do they carry that over to now with Tyus Battle coming back? And I think that's a big question to ask. Let's dive into it a little bit more next. Your call is welcome at 315-437-7644. We'll talk about Tyus Battle, his return to the Orange, when we come back here on Orange Nation.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg.
We're brought to you by CH Insurance here on Orange Nation. We'll be joined in a little less than an hour by Brian Higgins of the Syracuse Sports Network, the voice of SU women's basketball here on ESPN Radio, voice of SU lacrosse. They've got a big game at CNS this weekend. Them and Duke meeting up out at Cicero North Syracuse High School. So we'll talk to Brian about those two things, maybe get a little SU men's basketball talk in as well as we get ready for a busy time in the SU sports calendar. But I do want to get to here before we get to Brian, a look at the bracket, look at a couple games. I want to get to a sound check as well. But looking at this NCAA tournament, looking at this field, there's always intriguing games, there's always intriguing matchups. But I've got three games over the first couple of days that I'm going to be keeping a close eye on. Three games in particular, because I don't want to go through all the games. I don't want to go and pick my winners. I don't want to go and tell you all about my bracket. You don't care. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear who I have in the game between Villanova and St. Mary's. Like, you don't care. You don't want to hear who my Final Four is, probably. I might give that to you later. But you probably don't care about my picks going game in and game out. It's one of my pet peeves this time of year. It's one of my pet peeves in football season as well. Like, nobody cares about your fantasy team. If you see me, don't say, oh, I got this guy on my fantasy team. Good thing I picked up Jason Witten. Like, he's having a great bounce back year. Stop. No, we don't care. Like, fantasy teams and brackets are two things that go together. They're great for you to have, and they're great for you to pay attention to. Like, for me, the reason I do a bracket, I don't even necessarily do it to enter a pool at this point. Like, we've got one in the office, I enter it, great. I fill out a bracket because I want to know who to, like, quote-unquote, root for in games. You know, when I'm watching, I don't need a vested interest, but, you know, it's fun to have. It's fun to have, like, an outline of, hey, I want that team to win because I picked them in my bracket. But, like, I'm not going to, like, run around being like, ah, I picked the 15. Like, congrats, I got it. Whatever. I'll get off my soapbox now. But three games that I am looking forward to, three things that I'm looking to as big keys this first couple of days of the NCAA tournament. I'll start with the one seed. I'll start with Virginia. It's the elephant in the room. It really is. And I made this joke as we were sitting at the Mello Center. I made this joke as we were, you know, watching the brackets come undone and watching the teams go get checked off one after another. But you look at what Virginia got dealt. They get Gardner Webb. They get the 16 seed. It's standard. Gardner Webb, the automatic qualifier out of their conference. You can't tell me that when Gardner Webb saw their name pop down underneath Virginia, you can't tell me that Gardner Webb wasn't looking at that and saying, ah, well, you know what happened last year? Right? Like, it's the elephant in the room. Everybody in that Gardner Webb viewing party, after the initial, like, loud roar and jumping up and down, like, hey, we're actually in the tournament. Like, welcome. We saw Greg Gumbel say our name. After that initial shock and enjoyment wears off, the next feeling has to be, well, you know what Virginia did last year. You know what happened to them. It's that weird elephant in the room. And so I don't think they're going to lose again. I don't think that they're going to have any problem. Here's the one thing I will tell you from my bracket. I have them winning the national championship. Like, I look at Virginia as that good, and I feel like it's become a contrarian take to go and put them in the Final Four or put them in the championship game because of what they've done in March, because of what they did last year in the NCAA tournament, because of what they did against Florida State last week in Charlotte, because of what happened with Syracuse 3 years ago. It's become a contrarian take to say, no, Virginia is really good. To say, no, Virginia is a Final Four national championship contender. It's become contrarian to say that, but I really do believe that they are. So I don't think they're going to have any problems with Gardner Webb. But I do think that the game on Friday will tell you something. I think that it'll give you a little glimpse into what they are. I fully expect Virginia to go out and throttle Gardner-Webb. I fully expect Virginia to go out and beat them by 25 or 30 points. Pedal to the metal, all out, from the jump all the way to the final buzzer. Because they don't want to have a repeat of last year. They know that after the game, no matter what they do, the question is going to be, is it nice to get that monkey off your back? Is it nice to get that feeling over with? So I think that Virginia is going to go out and throttle them. But I do wonder what happens if they don't. I do wonder what happens if all of a sudden it's only a 5-point game at the half. Do they freak out? Do they get worried? Do they clam up? Or do they go the opposite direction and turn it into hyperdrive and then win the game by 25 or 30? Which one is it? And I think you'll be able to tell pretty soon. But I'm just wondering how Virginia comes out. How does Virginia come out of the gates? I'm not worried about them. I don't think they're going to have any problems. I think that they are a fantastic team. I think that Tony Bennett is one of, if not the best coaches in the country. They've got incredible talent. How do they come out on Friday? That's the first thing that I'll be looking at. Second one is Florida State, oddly enough. I know I'm picking a couple ACC teams here, but Florida State is an interesting team to me, and I've said this before. Florida State's problem for me is that they don't always play their best guys the most minutes. And I hate it so much. Maybe it's because I've gotten trained to think that your best players should be playing 38, 39, 40 minutes a game by sitting up here and watching Syracuse basketball for the last 7 years. But I watch Florida State and I say there's no reason why Mifeanu Cabangeli is not playing 35 minutes a game. I watch and I say there's no reason why Terrence Mann is not playing 30 minutes a game. But Leonard Hamilton wants to play 13 guys. Wants to get these guys in, fresh legs, rotation, and bring guys in and out. And it means that, you know, sometimes your best player is only playing 15 or 20 minutes a game. It's not something that I agree with. It's not something that I would do as a head coach. I would want my best players on the team, on the floor. I just would. And there's no reason why Cabangeli is only playing 21 minutes a game. There's no reason why Phil Kofer is only playing 26 minutes a game. It just doesn't make sense to me. And so while I think they're incredibly talented, while I think that they are an incredibly deep team, they've got scoring from all over the place. They've got a great set of athletes and players and you know, assets. I think they could go all the way to the Final Four, but at the same time, Leonard Hamilton could happen, and they could end up losing in the first round to a team like Vermont. They're one of those teams that could go either way. They're one of those teams that I just don't know the answer to going into tournament play because of the way they're coached. And I that shouldn't be a slight on a guy who's been doing this for 50 years. So I can't imagine that Leonard Hamilton is... I'm continually amazed that Leonard Hamilton is going to be 71 this summer. Every year, that is a fact that manages to boggle my mind. But he's been doing this for a while, and it shouldn't be doubting a coach who's been highly successful for the last 25 years. But at the same time, I doubt the coach who's been highly successful for the last 25 years because I've seen it cause problems for them. I've seen that team come up to the Carrier Dome and lose to an inferior Syracuse team because they didn't have Jonathan Isaacs, a top 5 pick in the draft, on the court. I've seen them lose first-round games because their best players aren't playing. And it's just something that I can't get over. Their leading scorer plays 21 minutes a game. Like, there's just no reason for that. Imagine what he could do in 30 minutes or 35 minutes. Wouldn't you be at least a little tempted to find out? That's the thing that gets me with Florida State. So I think they're talented enough to get all the way to the Final Four. I think that the way they are coached and the system that they have could lead to them getting knocked out by Vermont. So I'm watching that game when they take on the Catamounts this weekend. And the game that I am most excited for, the actual game I'm most excited for, is Murray State and Marquette. And Murray State is going to be that trendy pick. Murray State is going to be that pick that everybody in the office makes to send the double-digit seed to the Sweet 16. Murray State's going to be that team because Murray State's got a highlight machine, because Murray State's got Ja Morant, because he's a top three pick in the draft, because he dunks on people and he jumps over people easy. Murray State's going to be that trendy Cinderella. And they go up against Marcus Howard, who is just a scoring machine for Marquette. I want to see those two guards going at it. I cannot wait to watch those two guards go at it. It's going to be incredibly, incredibly fun to see that play itself out. That's the actual game that I am looking forward to the most this opening weekend. It's Thursday afternoon. It's the last afternoon game of the day, so it'll start at around 4:30. That's the physical game, the one singular game that I'm looking forward to the most, because it should be fantastic. Why don't we take a time out here? We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour with a sound check, and we'll kick off hour number two coming up in about 15 minutes with some baseball talk. We're back next with more on Orange Nation.
Jumper on the way. Good. Tyus Battle nails the three.
Dungy leaps and into the end zone for Dungy. A touchdown.
If that's not on every highlight show tonight, then I don't know who's watching.
Howard for Dungy. Soaring through the air. High-flying Slovakian.
Screen pass here. He'll get one. And he stays alive, and he's got room to the 10. One man to beat. He'll do it. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And for Syracuse, party time. The upset pulled by the Orange. They defeat Clemson 27-24.
The penetration. Step back. A pressure bucket for Tyus Battle.
This is Orange Nation with Stephen Fonte and Seth Goldberg, powered by Drivers Village and Hummel's Office Plus.
Hour number two of Orange Nation here on ESPN Radio. We take you up until 2 o'clock. Brent X coming up at 4 o'clock. Crunch Hockey on ESPN 97.7 and 100.1 tonight. And the first four on ESPN AM 1200 coming up at 6:30. It's one of those times in the sports world, the NCAA tournament, a great thing. You get a little taste of it tonight, couple games tonight, couple games tomorrow night, and then just full go Thursday, Friday, with, I think, the two best days of the sports calendar. That's on the table if you'd like to call in at 315-437-7644 or shoot us a text at 288-0644 or, of course, on Twitter at SethGoldberg17. We're going to have Brian Higgins joining us in a couple of moments here to talk SU women's basketball and SU men's basketball, also the SU men's lacrosse game. He's actually going to have to bundle up for a home game. I hope Brian is nice and warm and toasty in that CNS press box. I can say from experience, nice press box they've got there out at Cicero North Syracuse High School. That's a very impressive facility for a high school venue. That much I can say for certain. But Brian will be out there for Syracuse and Duke on Sunday. So we'll get into all of that with Brian coming up in about 15 minutes from now. But I want to talk some baseball here for a moment. Want to talk some baseball on this March afternoon. Because earlier today, you got the shockwave news, the news that kind of jumps through your screen as you see it. And the news that, quite honestly, I didn't expect to see now. I didn't expect to see for maybe a year, or maybe even more than that. And that is Mike Trout signing a contract extension. Mike Trout signing a contract extension with the Angels out in Anaheim. Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Silly name. So he stays in LA. He stays in Anaheim. And you gotta think, he's 2 years away from free agency. You gotta think, when he signs this contract, wow, that's gotta be for a lot of money. Right? You've gotta look at this deal and say, wow, that must have been a boatload of money for him to give up free agency, for him to forego an open market and just say, yes, let's do it. I'm staying here. All right, what do you get? 12 years. Oh, that sets the stage. That sets the table. 12 years, $430 million. Now, I had two simultaneous thoughts when I saw this. Wow, that's a crap load of money. Wow, that's a lot of money, was one thought. And then on the other hand, is he still underpaid? Is that still not enough money for Mike Trout? Are they still getting a bargain of a deal at $35.8 million a year? Are they still getting a bargain of a deal at nearly $500 million? Because as ridiculous as it might sound, and as crazy as it might sound, I think they are. I think the Angels are getting a bargain. I think they are getting a good deal. Here, cutting that deal and getting Trout to lock in and sign on through his age 40 season. Now, we know how these things work. 12-year deals, they don't always pan out. Look at A-Rod at the end of his second 10-year deal. Look at CC Sabathia and Mark Teixeira and David Wright and Joey Votto and Felix Hernandez and Joe Mauer. And look at all of them throughout the years. Prince Fielder, Miguel Cabrera. Pick anyone that you want. There are plenty that don't work out. Plenty that don't work out. I think Manny Machado's will. I think Bryce Harper's will. And I think Mike Trout's will. Call me stupid. Call me naive. Manny Machado at 26 years old signed a 10-year contract. He's still going to be a perfectly serviceable player at 35. Bryce Harper signed a 13-year deal. It'll take him through his age 39 season. Do I think he's going to be great? Do I think he's going to be an all-star through that last season? No, not necessarily, but I think he'll be fine. And the pay is going to, you know, drop off to a level where it's all worth it. And for Mike Trout, Mike Trout is one of the greatest players of all time already. If he retired today, he would be in the Hall of Fame, if not for their, you know, requirement that you play 10 years in the major leagues. But if he were to retire today and allowed to make the Hall of Fame without having played 10 years, he would already be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Mike Trout is going to go down as one of the all-time greats, if not the greatest baseball player ever. Think about that for a second. So $430 million over 12 years, not a bad deal. Not a bad deal at all. Not in my mind. Because it's more than just him as a player. It's about saying that he played in one city his entire life. It's about saying that he only played for one franchise, only one wore one hat, and will go into the Hall of Fame as one of the top five greatest baseball players ever as an Anaheim Angel. That's what that deal is about. And for Trout, it's a comfort factor. For Trout, it's probably nice. You might say, hey, I don't know what Mike Trout looks like. And I don't blame you. His team hasn't been good. They haven't been in the playoffs. They haven't been good enough to be showcased regularly on Fox and ESPN and these national games. They play out west, so their games are late when they are on ESPN midweek. I get it. It's fair. It's fair to say that you don't know what Mike Trout looks like. It is. And it's incumbent on the Angels over the next 14 years to figure out a way to get him recognized. It's their job to figure out how to get this team to some point that they can make the playoffs. Figure it out. Make it work. Because you've now locked up the greatest player of a generation for his entire career. No opt-outs. He's going to have a no-trade clause in 3 years. If he doesn't already have one in the new contract, he'll get it in a couple of years by major league rules. When you're in the league 10 years and with a team for 5 years, no-trade clause. You're stuck with him, for better or for worse. I say for better. It makes your team relevant. It gives you reason to go watch the Angels, even if they aren't good. And it gives you a player to build around. So this is a great deal for the Angels. and a great deal for Mike Trout. It's hard to say it's not a great deal for Mike Trout when you're going to get nearly $500 million over a 12-year period. It's a fantastic deal for Mike Trout. It's a win-win. And then one thought that I had afterwards. This is a slap in the face to Bryce Harper in a couple different ways, isn't it? This is a slap in Bryce Harper's face. First off, it's looking at Bryce Harper and the 13-year, $330 million contract he just signed. It's looking at Bryce Harper and that contract and saying, oh, 13 years, 330? That's cute. That's nice. Watch what I can do. Watch this. I'm not even a free agent. And I'm going to get fewer years and significantly more money. Watch this. That was part one. Part two is, remember that whole I'm going to recruit him to come to Philadelphia thing? You know, that whole, of course I'm going to tell him to come to Philly. Of course I'm going to make that phone call. Of course I'm going to get caught tampering. In which Major League Baseball actually comes after me for some ridiculous reason. Yeah, that whole thing? Yeah, not happening. Mike Trout's not going anywhere. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He never wants to leave Philadelphia, Los Angeles. He likes where he is. He doesn't want to have to go anywhere. And he's not going to have to go anywhere after he signs this contract. So yeah, maybe that wasn't the first thought that I had, but that was definitely a thought that I had. A slap in the face. It's like, it's more than a slap. It's like taking both hands and just going clap right on his cheeks. Right? Just like smack him twice. Hey, cute contract you got there. $330 million over 13 years. Watch this. $35 a year for 12 years. Yes, thank you. It's that. And it's, hey, I'm not coming to play with you. I'm not joining you in Philadelphia. It's not happening. Think about some of the contracts that have been signed in baseball this offseason, though. Pretty incredible. 10 years, $300 million for Machado. 13 years, $330 for Bryce. And now 12 years, $430 for Trout. Pretty incredible. And good for Mike Trout getting paid. Again, he might have been able to get more on an open market. He might have been able to get more if he hit free agency. But do you really need that much more? Like, I think that that's got to be part of it, right? You like the comfort factor there. You like the team. You like the people. You like the organization and the city and the house you live in. Do you really need more? At some point, you don't. That probably factored into it with Mike Trout. Why don't we take a time out here? Brian Higgins coming up next here on Orange Nation.